and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 29. Very happy to have Oren Michaels, the CEO of Mashery, here as our guest. Hi, Oren.
Hi. Pleased to be here.
Great to have you. I'm Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show, and we'll jump right into the industry news. A few deals these past couple of weeks since our last show. IBM bought Cast Iron, which seemed to be much more targeted to cloud services. We saw VMware and actually the Spring Source Group buy Gemstone to focus on some caching things there. Also, Salesforce bought Jigsaw for contact management, so no shortage of deals in the last few weeks in the cloud computing space.
Jigsaw had recently become a Mashery customer, so that's definitely a plug. You become a Mashery customer, you open an API, you get bought. It's a lovely thing.
Like that. Fantastic. Yeah, you know, we actually had used the Jigsaw, I think they call it Jigsaw Data Fusion, mm-hmm. which plugs right into Salesforce, and it's pretty sweet because you sort of line up your criteria and the leads just pop in on an ongoing basis. Yep. So congrats to the Jigsaw team. I'm sure they have found a good home. Another story that got a little airplay was that the government has moved recovery.gov to Amazon EC2, and that was signaled perhaps as the preeminent adoption of cloud computing. I don't know if you saw that.
Well, I didn't see that, but I mean, well, there's also a big announcement today that Netflix is moving a bunch of their stuff to EC2, and Amazon got a big PR push out of it.
Yeah. And you know, people Netflix, said, you know, Netflix has, compete, well, but they don't, you know?
No, they don't compete at all. And you know, it's kind of funny. We're big EC2 users here, have been since EC2 came out. And you know, therefore, since Netflix API runs on Mashery, they've been using EC2 for a while anyway. You know, because you know, pretty much most of us are using EC2, whether we know it or not. Werner Vogels, who's Amazon's CTO, tweeted about a week ago that he was playing with his iPad and realized that virtually every app he was playing with was actually coming off of his servers.
Yeah.
And so you know, it's hardly news. You know, they say that the you know, all of the Fortune 500 are using EC2, and it's true.
Whether they know it or not.
Well, it's the CTO doesn't know, the CIO may not know it, but in the business units, people are popping down their credit card and buying servers.
Or they might even be using a service that is built on Amazon,
sure.
that doesn't
also,
even
also
expose
possible.
Amazon EC2 directly.
Also, yeah, and it's, you know, it's one of the great myths in the cloud world is that, you know, we've heard this even from some prospects of ours that you know, will Amazon, you know, we sometimes compete with Amazon, will Amazon be able to see our data? It's like, no, they don't, you know, they won't be able to see your data any more than, you know, Rackspace looks at your data if it's sitting on an actual server that you own. It's just,
right.
it's just not there. And,
right.
And I, you know, I like to say, look, we've got great sysadmins here, but Amazon can afford more of them. So
right.
I think that you're actually better off having your stuff running on our, you know, having our stuff that powers you running on services like EC2 that are incredibly well managed,
yeah.
as long as we manage them effectively, as long as
right.
we say, okay, and this was a big part of why we, you know, we made the decision to go all in with EC2, which we did. You know, Mashery is reaching its fourth birthday in about a week or so.
Congrats.
Thank you. And it was about 6 or 8 weeks after we started the company that EC2 got announced. So we looked at that and said, as the business guy, I said, great, no CapEx. And you know, our CTO said, great, something
yeah.
cool and new to play with. Okay, great, so we're both happy. So we went whole hog, we went all in. But at the time, there was only one size of instance, which you know they now call small, but it was the only thing then. And you know, it was less reliable. There was only one location. There was only one availability zone. We didn't even know what availability zones were yet. And
right.
so we basically made the decision that we had to architect as if our servers would mostly be up.
Right.
We didn't make the assumption that they would always be up. A lot of times you buy a server, it's brand new, you get it out of the box, you rack it, you go, oh, this is a beautiful server, and you don't think it's going to go down. And so, you know, we actually, because we were suspicious, you know, we have from day one said, okay, we know some of these will go down
right.
over time.
Right.
When they brought us more availability zones, more regions, we just started federating it because we thought, you know, this is how you're going to succeed
yeah.
in the cloud. And anybody who sits and whines about the fact that something goes down and then blames it for being a cloud, it's like, you know,
right.
if you get a flat tire, it's not because, you know, it's not Mercedes's fault or Hugo's fault. It's a tire is a tire, you know,
right.
and just there you go. They go flat every once
yeah.
in a while.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the story there was more of portraying the government perhaps as one of the sort of like last holdouts before they'd put something into the cloud.
Hardly the case.
And people were making the story about,
hardly
well, if they're moving recovery.gov to the cloud, you know, game over. But in any event, an interesting little snippet there.
Doesn't WhiteHouse.gov run on? I don't know if it's on EC2, but I think it's running on WordPress or something like that. I don't know. It's, you know, there's all kinds of, of stuff. The world in government is in many ways way less risk averse than the world in you know, a lot of entrenched corporate IT departments where people are trying to save their jobs.
Yep. A couple of other big announcements, of course, VMware and Salesforce, you merge that together, you got VMforce, so, you know, I didn't dig into a lot of the details there, but I'm sure it's going to make life easier for people who love both of those solutions. And then just today, we saw some news coming out of Juniper Networks, who's really on a roll in sort of a rebranding and a product launch campaign to sort of challenge Cisco with networking, particularly on the cloud infrastructure side of networking, and I think they're doing a good job. Next show, we'll perhaps be able to dig into that a little more deeply. So I want to jump into the guest Q&A with you, Arnson, while we have you here, and do appreciate the time. Before we jump into some specifics about Mashery, can you just give us a little bit of a background on yourself, sort of getting to Mashery?
Sure. A sort of odd and varied path. I did get a degree in engineering, electrical engineering from MIT. Was a coder for a couple of years, went to business school, came out and decided to run a theater company. So I spent a year running a company called The Groundlings, which is kind of a farm team for Saturday Night Live. It's a comedy improv thing on Melrose in L.A. Got that out of my system, ran a couple of manufacturing companies, and then was given the opportunity to run an online auction company dealing in fine and rare wine called winebid.com.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that might be fun. And they gave me an option. They said they needed to locate the headquarters, and I could put it either in Napa or in Chicago. It was my choice. So I thought a long time about that decision. And and after about 10 seconds, I said, yeah, we'll be moving it to Napa. And that's how, you know, I ended up moving up here from L.A. That was in 99, so I've been here for a while. And after that, I ran a SaaS company, business process outsourcing thing in HR and benefits. And then I wound up at Feedster, which was a small search engine for RSS and blogs and such. And we needed to open some APIs. And there was not the infrastructure necessary to do so and control it. We didn't have the sufficient engineering resources to build all that ourselves. And so it seemed clear that the company wasn't going to succeed well without it. And as the biz dev guy, I couldn't really dev much biz. So I went to the board and said, you know, I think that it's time to part ways. And one of the board members was Josh Koppelman at First Round Capital. Josh and I went to dinner afterwards. He asked me what I wanted to do. I said, well, this API thing's bugging me a little bit. And by the time the appetizers came, Josh had sufficiently helped turn it from a napkin thing into an idea for an actual business. He wrote us a check 2 weeks later, added a few more angels in, and we incorporated.
Nice. So that covers a little bit about how the company formed. Give us a brief overview of Mashery's product and services for people who might not have heard about the company at all.
Yeah, so there are these things called APIs.
And again, let's
and I'm gonna start with what they are.
Dig into that.
So, you know, API, application programming interface, sounds kind of geeky. It's actually a really simple concept. It's how do you take data or services from one provider and incorporate them onto a platform or an application offered by another provider. So let's take the really easy example, something like Netflix. Netflix has a set of services around Netflix.com. You can look at movie reviews, you can add things to your queue, you can put things in Instant Watch, you can
see what your friends are watching.
See what your friends are watching. All that stuff you can do at Netflix.com. Well, what if you wanted to see that stuff from a connected device or an iPhone or an iPad?
Or put it in your blog.
Or put it on your blog, whatever. That, in order to have the ability, for instance, to write an iPhone app based on that stuff, you need to have access into those services. And the way that you as a developer who wants to write an iPhone app gets access into those services is through this thing called an API. So Netflix has said, we will allow, with certain rules, certain restrictions, and you have to agree to certain terms, but if you do that, we will allow you direct access into the back office, into the things that actually
like power
our website, our database, our services, the add to queue, the check the ratings. We'll give you direct access into that with management and rules and things like that.
Right, you can't do everything, but we're going to give you a certain set of it.
But we're going to give you a certain set of it, and that set of stuff, those will become the building blocks for your application. And those building blocks are called the API. And when we talk about that, the fact that there are rules involved and there have to be communication about how to do it, that's where Mashery comes in. So Mashery sits between that back office, that database, and the outside world of developers, and we're essentially the traffic cop. We decide who has access to what based on the rules that Netflix establishes. We provide all the communication so the developers out there know how to actually use this. And then we also, for a number of our customers...
Communication to the developers, sort of educate developers.
Yeah, educate developers, exactly. Okay. And then we also provide a lot of services around developers in general. We have over 50,000 developers who are signed up with various Mashery-powered APIs, and we are able to help our customers reach those developers, engage with them, and we have a whole strategy arm here to help our customers sort of figure out, okay, if I'm going to open this stuff up, why am I going to do that? How does it help our business? How do we make money on that? Why would we, you know, what does open mean? What is the concept with all this?
So you and really help companies that have data that could be valuable and likely is
services.
Valuable
data
service,
or services.
Really expand the
Absolutely.
Reach.
Absolutely. Well, you think about it that, going back to the Netflix example, or, you know, the Best Buy is a big customer of ours as well. You know, you go to Netflix.com. Well, Netflix doesn't actually make any money by people coming to Netflix.com. They make money by you being a happy subscriber.
Right.
So if you're a happy subscriber and you're interacting on an iPhone app that some random developer wrote, well, Netflix is thrilled because you're a happy subscriber.
Right, and you're engaging
and
more.
And you're engaging with the brand and you're using it and you're less likely to go away. So Netflix's business model does not have anything to do with Netflix.com. In that's the case in most subscription concepts. If you're a retailer, let's say you're Best Buy or you're someone in that retail realm. Etsy is a company we work with a lot. They don't care per se if you go to BestBuy.com. They just want you to buy big screen TVs.
And well, so, from Best Buy.
From BestBuy.com, right?
Yeah. So they don't want care to, how you get
right,
in.
Exactly. So they want to make sure that buying experience is not only as easy as it can be, but that it interacts with you where you are.
Pervasive.
Because you know, Best Buy is one of the largest e-commerce sites on the internet, and yet they only get about 0.07% of your browsing attention if you're a U.S. internet user, meaning 99.93% of the time you're somewhere else.
Right.
Well, they realize that trying to get the kind of growth in their company they need and in BestBuy.com they need by only waiting for you to type BestBuy.com into the address bar is just not going to work very well. They want
right.
to they want to be interactive, just like Starbucks puts stuff on every corner, and just like in the offline world, Best Buy doesn't just build one big store and wait for you to come to it. Best Buy has a whole team of people that say, where are their people? And there is no Best Buy store. We'll put a Best Buy store there.
Right.
Well, on the internet, the same thing has to happen. It's a process they call densification. On the internet, it's virtual densification. Where are people? They're in Facebook. They're on iPhones. They're on Blackberries. They're on, they're in third-party applications. They're in, they're in comparison shopping sites. There are all these different places. And Best Buy wants to give as many people as possible a set of tools to make great experiences around shopping from BestBuy.com so that you have this great experience, but in the end, that purchase runs through Best Buy and they get to fulfill it.
Right. So those examples of e-commerce retail reach are very easy to understand. Are there some other major use cases of folks using APIs?
Pretty much anyone who's on a mobile app, on an iPhone app, native iPhone app, native iPad app, has to have an API of some sort. It's sort of part of the price of admission. An example of that is USA Today. So they're a media company, right? We all know what they are. Well, USA Today is not as known for their online property as they are for their offline. When you compare it to a New York Times or even Wall Street Journal, they don't have quite that same level of traffic. Yet USA Today has news that's really conducive to mobile devices because it's edited, written, and curated for people who only have a few minutes. So they're shorter stories.
Right.
There's a lot of it, a lot of information presented graphically. So it's a perfect tool for the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
So they happened to open an API through us end of last year. It was actually fairly recent. And then the iPad came out and they had a developer take this API, build a native iPad app. And it's the number four app in the App Store. Right? It's the number four iPad app right out of the gate because they figured out, they said to a great UI person, here's your set of tools. Here's the art of the possible. Take these things, and using this as your constraint, go build a great experience tailored to the iPad. Mm-hmm. And that person was able to do that without a bunch of conversations back to...
Because the APIs were already in place.
The APIs were in place. So they didn't have to like have an integration call. They didn't have to work with USA Today's engineers. They, you know, here were the services. You knew what they were. Okay.
Right. So you can if get stories, you can get weather, yeah, sports,
if
whatever.
If you see that stuff, there you go. And so far, USA Today is doing this as an ad-supported application. I think it's Courtyard by Marriott is the main advertiser on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so... You know, you have this great opportunity, and now suddenly people who were previously interacting with USA Today mostly when they stayed at hotels that dropped them by your room are now using it as a primary means of getting news, myself included.
Yeah.
Because if I've got, you know, 3 minutes, I'm standing in line waiting for you know, coffee or something, I can flip over my iPad and I can read two or three news stories and get a little bit of information. It's a great service.
Right. Now, APIs, we're a world away from where we were a few years ago with APIs. I mean, a lot's changed. When you guys started out, we really didn't even have the whole world of cloud computing as the way we define it today. What, in your opinion, has changed industry-wide for the better? And maybe what are some of the challenges regarding APIs that are still need to be addressed?
Well, at least people can spell API now, which is definitely a start. And, you know, it's gone from certainly... There are a couple things that changed, though. When I started Mashery, I assumed that most of our customers were going to be people like me at Feedster. They were people who, small companies, startups, trying to get stuff done that, you know, that really needed to get this going, and they were the early adopters, and we'd be selling to startups for a long time. And actually, it turned out not to be the case. Startup tech people tend to... a lot of them tend to be people who like to control everything and don't really like to use any kind of service from anywhere if they think they can build it themselves. So that was a little surprising. But what happened instead were that major companies were finding out that APIs were sort of a necessary condition for success in the world in general, whether it's cloud or it's third-party platforms. You know, the opening of the Facebook platform was a big eye-opener, not necessarily because all these companies were saying, I want to specifically be on Facebook, but more because companies were starting to realize that, gosh, it turns out that they may not, that their core competency may not be running a website that reaches, you know, hundreds of millions of people. Right. Maybe their core competency is doing what's behind their app. Maybe it's shipping movies around if you're Netflix. Maybe it's shipping big screen TVs. Maybe it's curating the news. So if they wish to engage with partners on distribution, then of whatever their service is, then they had to have this means and make it easy.
Right.
And so we started getting one after another of these large companies where someone gets it.
Uh-huh.
And they would become our champion, and then we'd work with them to help them sell it up the ladder and end up in there. And we've sold, you know, a bunch of customers that are household names to do that. You know, the latest being a really big company being Hallmark, 100-year-old uh-huh. company.
Right.
They're opening up all kinds of APIs, and a lot of people don't realize they
like
have
for the e-card stuff.
The e-cards for the print-on-demand. They're one of the biggest print-on-demand providers in the world. They have incredible service. They can make paper plates with pictures of your kid and happy birthday on. They can do all kinds of
just
stuff.
Just consumer there. Level home.
Consumer
Hallmark.
Level stuff, and they have a website that gets something like 65 million uniques a month. Which is just an astonishing number.
Right.
So, you know, and we all look at it going, yeah, but I don't go very often. Well, maybe I'm not the target demographic, but believe me, 65 million people do. So
right.
There's something going on there, and they want to get that built in. And there was a guy at Hallmark who recognized this and has pushed this thing through. So we're seeing a lot of that. And that's probably been the biggest thing, is we can now call into these very large companies, and with not too much effort, we can find the person who's running the API initiative.
Right.
And it's amazing the companies where this
right.
is happening.
And those people didn't exist for years ago.
No, there's no way. We didn't exist at all. You know, and so we're seeing that. That's huge for us. I think that one of the you know, it's still there, the focus on immediate quarterly results, and then there's also the fear of openness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the some of the people in some companies look at it and say, okay, I know I need an API. But, you know, maybe I'll do one next quarter because I'm busy this quarter. And, you know, that,
yeah.
So there's a little
just,
bit of...
Just molasses, standard molasses.
You know, standard molasses helps. And then there's, you know, there are certain industries, like content is one in particular, where there's a huge fear of cannibalism.
Sure.
And, you know,
But then on the flip side, you have these stories of USA Today, which is just like...
Bear in mind, USA Today, not a little easier because it's not as big a cannibalism issue because the online property wasn't as significant a thing. But, of course, our first big media company who worked with us on the API was New York Times.
Right.
And they know a thing or two about running an online property, right? So, you know, there are people out there
because they really some of them really want captive eyeballs, and some of them have a model where the content can carry itself.
And some of them, like the guys in the New York Times, are recognizing it as what it is, which is a means to drive traffic. If you pump out content there and it has links back to you, people are going to click on those links.
Right.
Right. And so you find the people who are generally more worried about cannibalism are worried about cannibalism in general, and you know they're doing all kinds of things that might be slowing down the potential growth.
Right.
It's not just, you know, not just the API front.
Right. Now, this might, in the world of APIs, there's, let me rephrase that, there's a whole world of APIs from some of the examples that you talked about to other examples like how do I launch a server on EC2?
Sure.
Can you categorize the market a little bit about, are there types of APIs where
there's read-only APIs and read-write APIs. There was a whole lot of conversation. We run a conference called Business of APIs. It was in New York this past fall. And a lot of people got up and said, basically, if there's no writing in the API, it's not really an API. It's a religious conversation. But the fact is that one of the great things about APIs is that they are an opportunity to be bidirectional. And I think you've seen that in companies like Twitter and Flickr before them and Delicious, where the whole concept of how the entire service was consumed from reads and writes was, you know, were that way. I think that in terms of, you know, we do our best. Obviously, we are a web services API, enabler. So therefore, when you talk about hardware level APIs, we have no role. You know, the API under which the iPhone talks to the GPS chip inside, that's also called an API. It's a totally different thing. So we're, we don't play in that realm. But generally, where we succeed and where our customers succeed is where you can look at whatever their business model is, and you can find a place of nirvana where, as the API provider, your numbers, whatever the numbers are that you measure yourself by, improve based on assistance and innovation and distribution through others. And at the same time, these others, these developer partners, can get something out of it too, where you have a win-win situation. And there are basically... Now, there are a small number of business models in the web, as we know. Everything sort of boils down to a few of them. We look at four in particular that are fairly API conducive. We can give examples. We already talked about a couple of them. So the first is, in no particular order, the first is e-commerce, right? So in e-commerce or e-tail, actually everything's e-commerce, but in e-tail, you have someone like a Best Buy. Well, okay, if a developer could build an app, Best Buy recently, for instance, increased the affiliate fee they'll pay to people who are actually using the API versus people who aren't. They did that. They announced that at South by Southwest. If basically developers can make money helping Best Buy sell big screens, digital cameras, Best Buy wins, developer wins. Really, really obvious. You know, this is like the world's easiest business model. Fine. Next, one level down from that is the subscription concept, which is sort of like a Netflix, where you have an ongoing monthly recurring revenue stream. That monthly recurring revenue stream is something you want to maintain. It's largely a flat revenue stream, so however people consume it, slice and dice it, you know, whether it's, you know, so if you give people iPhone apps, or you give people connected devices or whatever it is, your goal is to have them pay you your $12, $30, $20, whatever it is, dollars per month and not stop doing so.
Right.
And so in that case, you've got on the API provider side, they want to get their monthly recurring revenue. On the developer side, generally they'll make their money by actually selling the app. Sometimes they'll make their money from referral fees, but generally speaking, like you look at Netflix, Netflix has, I don't know how many subscribers, millions, 3 million, 4 million, whatever the number is. So if I write an app and I charge $1.99 for it, and it's a great app, if I can get 10%...
Sure, you've got a business.
I've got a house, right, in most parts of the country. And remember, developers don't have to live in the highest cost of living areas. So
right. There
are parts of the world where you have a really nice house if you do that. Right.
So this whole ability to sell and develop apps also is just falling into your lap.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. I mean, the iPhone was a huge thing for us, and the iPad has been a huge thing for us.
Right.
So, you know, that's the next one. And then... then beyond that, you have the media companies. So, like we talk about, New York Times or the Guardian,
sort of the content stuff,
content people. And there, you're either again doing apps and you're putting ads directly in them, like what USA Today is doing, or you're basically using it as a means of generating traffic. That you're making the bet that if you put your content out there and let other people build a business, a publisher build a business by selling some ads against your content, as long as you have proper attribution, you gain more traffic back, et cetera, that you're that net net you're going to do better than you would if you close everything down.
Right.
And then your developers, partner, the incentive for them is they have more stuff to fill more pages so they can sell their own ads.
Yep.
And then the last one is more of a business level, and it's data sales. You talked about Jigsaw earlier, right? So
gotcha.
The concept, and this is the only one, the data sales world, interestingly, is the only one where there's any real support for a model that charges for use of the API. And that only works if your general business model is charging for data. So if you're someone like a Hoover's and your job is to charge for data, then maybe you want to charge for the API, although in some cases they bundle it into a subscription. If you're selling, maybe real-time stock quotes. I don't know, but there are a handful of kinds of data.
Right. But this is also getting to be a bigger business because people are now taking publicly accessible data and curating it in a way that makes it really easy to consume.
Because there's so much of it out there, absolutely.
Right.
And that's a huge deal. And so,
location data,
simple geo, you've got GNIP, right?
Right.
So all these people are doing things because, just like everything else, there's so much of it out there that they need access to these APIs, and they're making it easier for people. So those are the four basic API business models. The funny thing is that everybody sort of goes to the last one and says, oh, I've got an API, I'm going to start charging for access to it. Well, Netflix does not want to charge for access to their API. They want everyone to use it. Twitter, the last thing they want to do is charge for access to their API. They actually have to buy servers for that website of theirs.
Except when they provide stuff to the big search engines, they charge for it.
But that's different than a
consumer level.
Very, very different, exactly. And that's a different area. But they also recognize, they run a phenomenal developer program over Twitter, and they also recognize that they are allowing their company to exist by having these people innovating for them on the UI.
Right. I mean, all that integration, if you use the ecosystem of Twitter apps for picture posting and link sharing and blog, it's all because of their API ecosystem.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, when you boil it back, what all four of these have in common is that it's all about whoever's providing the API is increasing their business, whether it's e-commerce selling more stuff, whether it's subscriptions having less churn and more subscribers, whether it's the news people getting more traffic, the content people getting more traffic, or the data people selling more data. They're just doing more of what they already do. That's when APIs work. If you're saying, I'm in this business, but my API business model is going to be somewhere over here, then you're probably not going to be terribly successful because you're not doing what you're good at.
In some sense, you're really just automating another distribution channel.
In every sense, that's all you're doing, right?
Yeah.
And so then we get back to what's an API. An API is a framework where business gets done.
Right.
Ultimately, it's how you grow your business. And it was the absence of that, of the ability to manage that at Feedster, that caused me to realize that the company wasn't going to make it.
Yeah. It's interesting. It reminds me, I met with I did a show a while back with the folks from Twilio,
mm-hmm.
who are doing voice to web stuff.
Of course.
And Jeff tells a story, the CEO, about how he did two or three startups, and every time he was doing one of these new startups, he wanted to add a voice component, he couldn't.
Right.
And finally he said, well, maybe this is what I should do.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's always interesting to know the history.
That's sort of the where and the why and the how.
So let's say that one of our listeners today says, okay, Warren, I get it, and I can start to see where I might be able to use an API. What advice do you have for somebody before they call you?
Well, the best advice that I have, and I had this conversation the other day with a very wonderful angel investor who's been a successful entrepreneur and has a new stealth startup that'll be coming out in a few months. And I was talking to his technical guy, and he is doing exactly what you want to do, which is build the API first. Essentially, your site, your service, your own stuff, if you build the API first and you build your stuff on your API, irrespective of, you may or may not even run that part of the API through us, we don't care. But the concept is that...
Oh, even starting with the, with
you start
the API.
With the API.
And you actually load your application through the API.
You have to, because then you don't have two different code bases, right? You mm-hmm. don't have, because ultimately your own app becomes the world's best demo of the art of the possible of the API. If you can point to it, you can do this at Netflix.com. Netflix.com, you could rebuild Netflix.com in its entirety on top of the API.
Right.
It's that the API is that complete, and if it's not there, you got to ask yourself why. And so, if you don't do that, I guarantee you will be back refactoring one part after another to
So that's a great that's a great piece of advice for somebody who's at a greenfield situation where you can say, hey, build your IBM version, develop your application. What if I've got an existing application? What are the questions I should ask myself about, you know, is it right for me? What's a little checklist that you ask people to go through?
So there are a couple things. One is, if people are screen scraping you, you need an API. Right. Okay. If you detect screen scrapers, y'all need an API. Just
which is the automated bots coming in and
exactly. If that's happening, then they're taking it anyway. Might as well make it easy and engage with them. Secondly, if you're doing partnerships, you have a business development department at all, and they're doing partnerships with people, and then the partnership, someone shakes hands or signs a contract, and then we have integration. Right. If you then have to set up an integration call, you need an API. Because the biz dev people, and that's, by the way, why most of our customers pay us out of their biz dev budget, not out of their technical budget.
Yeah, because they're cutting down on the development, or the cost
they're
of doing a partnership.
They're doing more business.
Yeah,
they're devving more biz, right?
Yeah, without so many people.
So if your engineers are spending their time integrating with customers, particularly if they're doing basically the similar integration over and over and over again, it's time to do it. And so when people come to us, we generally say to them, you know, and it's usually some variation on either, you know, I'm sick of these integration calls, or, you know, we can't keep up with the biz dev work, or we did 15 partnerships last year, but we had to turn away 4,000 requests. You know, these kinds of things,
those
right?
Those are your signals.
Yeah, we call those API emergencies. But but with those, you know, with pretty much all these people, the concept is that that you're getting... there is a demand for people to interact with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nice thing about what we do here is we say, okay, what were the last three partnerships you did? What did you open to them? Okay, open that to us and you never have to do it again.
Right.
Essentially, the creation of the API should be your last ever integration. And
assuming it's representative of your business as a whole.
You'll end up being more. But yeah, I mean, assuming it's representative of... your business in the way that you conduct it with others. Obviously, right. There might be some things that you don't open, but the concept really is that if doing it is great with a few people, doing it should be better with more people.
Right.
And so if you're that kind of a business, you know, then that's something that you want to do. And then, you know, then you should look at it. You should look at what peers in your, you know, in your industry are doing. Most of the industry now have someone who's an early adopter. I mean, we get... all the time we get people saying to us in retail, we're doing what Best Buy's doing. Because, you know, Best Buy is definitely cutting edge here. And,
right.
And, you know, in the media, we're doing what New York Times is doing. You know, and we hear a lot of that. And it's great, you know, great for us. But the concept is, you know, look for the leader. And if there isn't one, go get it. Because, you know, we were talking to one large, you know, company of that size, they look in a different sector right now. And we said, you know, they said, well, you know, who's doing this well? And the answer is, well, no one yet.
So
that spot is available. You want it.
Right.
You know, and look at these companies in these other industries that have seized that spot and look at how they're growing.
Right.
And that, you know, that is getting, in this particular case, it got CEO attention when the VP took it to the CEO of a, you know, one of the largest corporations in the world. So, you know, this is, it is, and that's the other big surprise, is that you've got CEOs of major companies. Well, did the iPad launch, you know, the earnings call, USA Today earnings call, USA Today CEO on the earnings call is talking about the iPad app, building the API, right? You've got, I was at the DLD conference in Munich where the CEO of Best Buy spoke on the API.
That was because it's becoming a big part of their business. It's such a low cost of sale.
Yeah. It's like, it's a no-brainer. And you got the CEO of a company like that who even can spell API. That's a lovely thing.
Right. That's a big change from 2007.
So, yeah.
Any insight you can share with us, what to expect, things we should keep an eye out from a Mastery perspective that you want to share with the audience?
Well, we just rolled out a big reporting upgrade today, which is why there's a bunch of Coors Light floating around the office. That's what the reporting team likes to drink. We're doing a bunch of things. One, a couple of major things people have seen, really since Southwest of this past year, the whole element of building the Mastery API network and the developers, now that we have a critical mass of over 70 APIs that we're running, 50,000 developers, we're now able to really bring that force of innovation to bear on new customers. And at the same time, because we've done so many of these things, increasingly we're being asked to come in and actually do strategy. You know, the whole, okay, if I were to create this new distribution channel, how do I do that?
Right.
And just
what does
as,
it look like?
You know, in 10 years ago or 12 years ago, companies would go to you know, people like Broadvision and say, what is this e-commerce thing? How do I get people to put my credit card on the internet, right?
Right.
And now we're getting those same questions to us of, you know, what is this API thing? Please take us there. You know, we know we have to do it. We don't even know what it is. Help us out here. And that's where our strategy people really are able to engage and do more. So, you know, it's really, it's becoming a big chunk about how to build your business, not just about the pipes and the plumbing.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for that overview. Really appreciate it. Want to jump into the final couple sections of the show here. First, we keep an eye on on some of the industry events. So more on the cloud infrastructure side, upcoming at the end of May, we have GlueCon in Colorado.
We'll be there.
Excellent. Yeah, I would think as a sort of the conference focused on putting all the different pieces together.
Oh, yeah, and Eric runs is just a class act. It's a great show. We're going to be sponsoring. I think we're sponsoring a hackathon there. Everybody who shows up gets a lovely Mashery combination keychain beer opener and USB drive.
Fantastic. Boy, I got to see if I can get one of
yeah,
those around.
All those,
it doesn't look like they've showed up here yet.
There's not big boxes here. Otherwise, we wouldn't have too many of them left.
Good. Well, folks can check you out there. And then later on in June, we've got the Velocity Conference and the Structure Conference, so we're keeping an eye on that.
Of course.
Want to go into Cloud Tips, where we share a favorite consumer or business cloud service that we use on a daily basis. I'll go first. My latest is a calendaring service called Tungle. So,
oh, love those guys. Yeah.
So, yeah, forever been searching for some solution and... And I had a little thing through Gmail where I could expose the calendar, but Tungle really, see, I use a Mac now, and it seems to really do the integration well of just saying, go to my Tungle site, pick a time, it automates the thing, and boy, you know, when you need to save time on calendaring and schedule appointments. So that's tungle.me, and we'll have a link to the show notes. Oren, how about a pick from your side?
So one of my favorites that is near and dear to my heart is testing. We just did a big reporting rollout here. And it's amazing how little people actually test stuff. And in particular, if you're doing a very broad launch that you're expecting millions of people to show up for, how many companies test it with a few hundred simulated connections? So my pick is Sosta. I love Sosta. And the team is great. We use them here. These people can bring millions, literally millions of simultaneous connections, simultaneous sessions, complex scripts of sessions, and they can beat your service into submission and expose it before you get embarrassed. And, you know, some big embarrassments recently, you know, the whole thing with Intuit where they launched, you know, TurboTax online and they had tested it. You know, April 15th came and the whole thing went down. The IRS had to extend the deadline because Intuit didn't do their job. Well, Intuit's now a big Sosta customer, like, the next day. Right? I'm a huge fan. I think, Tom Lunabos is the CEO over there. Really smart guy, really smart team, and we love those guys.
Yeah, I think we've heard about them before, and I think I'm going to have to get them on the show sometime soon.
Yeah, talk to Tom. He's awesome. And the interesting thing about them is that because of the business they're in, they routinely run up against Amazon's maxes. They'll say, I want 1,000 instances, and Amazon will say, well, we don't have 1,000 available. So when it comes to understanding the art of working with multiple clouds simultaneously, they do this every single day. So it's something they could really talk to on your show.
You know, that is one of the most interesting things about cloud computing is the ecosystems upon ecosystems that get built, and it's really interesting to watch that take place. Great. Where can people get more info about you, about Mashery, websites, Twitter links?
Well, Mashery.com. You can follow Mashery. You can follow me, Oren Michaels, Oren Michels. And my blog is Praxis. The address is blog.praxicom, praxicom.com. I don't blog that often, but usually when I do, I have something to say. And but in general, you know, come to Mashery. We'll also be... we've got a few shows coming up. I know we'll be simultaneously while we're hackathoning at Glue, we'll also be hackathoning at TechCrunch Disrupt in New York this weekend.
Great.
And we'll also be at the TechCrunch Disrupt show. We'll be at Gov 2.0. Government is doing all kinds of great open stuff, so we're really excited to be there as well. There's just a ton of interesting things going on. And then this coming fall, we do our Business of APIs conference. We'll be doing it. We're looking to do it in three cities this fall.
Oh, you started that.
It's our conference.
Excellent.
APIconference.com. And there's no formal announcement yet, but we're looking to do them in San Francisco, New York, and London. So,
excellent.
Assuming that anybody can get to London in the next 6 months.
Right. So. And we'll have all those links in the show notes. For me, Gary Orenstein. You can follow me on Twitter, Gary Orenstein. We'll have a link in the show notes as well. And that's a wrap. So I want to thank our listeners very much for tuning in. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. And after I have a little off-show chat with Oren, I'll figure out how you can interact with us via our up-and-coming API.
Darn right. All the cool kids have one. Can't be a cool kid without an API.
You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes by just searching for The Cloud Computing Show and read the podcast search thing. And we'll have a link to the iTunes also in the show notes at thecloudcomputingshow.com. Thanks again, everyone. And we'll see you on the next show.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.